Good morning, and welcome again to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp in studio with my wife Jean from Brandywine Flags in the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton. And our guest today is Ross Schriftman. Ross is an independent insurance agent. He's been in the insurance business for 40 years, and his specialty is health care. Right now, he's focusing more on the Medicare insurance and the Part B supplement support, and along with the long-term care insurance. Welcome, Ross. Welcome to Raise the Standard.
Mike, thanks for having me.
We were talking a little bit before the show, and I know that you were involved in other insurance prior to the administration change to Obamacare or whatever. What caused you to change and focus more on the health care that you're looking at now?
Well, one of the things that happened in the last 10 years or so is that more and more of my clients are reaching the age of Medicare and also doing their long-term care planning. But when the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, passed, I was very active in the legislative end, working for better reforms than that actual legislation that got passed. And I decided to focus primarily going forward on Medicare and long-term care, because the regular health insurance market, I could see, was going to face severe problems with a lot of the new regulations, mandates, difficulties in trying to help people, this creation of exchanges and all kinds of other things. So that's the reason for my change in my market.
I know that this came and touched you in a very personal way, very close to home, in the fact that you lost your mother to Alzheimer's. And I know that that was a significant issue, if you will, in the health care that you had provided for her, and how you actually took care of your mother. And subsequent to that, you've actually written a book called My Million Dollar Mom, and that is now in production as a movie. So if you could give us a little history on the Alzheimer's, if you would, and the relationship with your mother, and how all that came about, we'd like to just reach out to the radio audience, because, as you had mentioned, Alzheimer's is a very common problem in all areas and all walks of life.
Right. Well, currently there are 5 million Americans that are diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and that is going to grow substantially. There's a lot of research being done, but the cause for Alzheimer's is still not particularly known, so it's very difficult for them to come up with treatments and cures for that illness. So it is something that many people deal with. Years ago, my mother and I had a discussion about what would happen when she got older and where she would want to be cared. So we actually did planning. And in 2007, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And I had promised her that if I could, I would keep her at home. Not everybody can do that. It's a difficult thing. My mother only had Alzheimer's. She didn't have other illnesses. It's bad enough when you have Alzheimer's because it requires 24-hour care in the form of watching somebody, making sure that they're safe, that they're healthy, and they're as happy as possible. So there's a lot of planning and hard work to do that. Having sold long-term care insurance and helped people with their planning for 20 years, I didn't really become an expert until 2007 when I started caring for my mother. The things that you have to figure out how to do, the difficulties in making sure the person doesn't wander or get themselves into trouble, and eating properly and watching them, there's so much involved in it.
So you were doing this in the home that you were living in your mother's home with her. Now, you also had a caregiver with you at that point, did you not?
Yes, I had a wonderful caregiver. Her name is Nora. She's originally from Liberia, and She's been here for a number of years now, and she lived with me and my mom for 2 years. She came through an agency, and I call her my sister Nora. She was a very big part of my ability to keep my mom at home, because you'd think that, you know, one person could take care of another person in the family, but you have to sleep, you have to eat, you have to go get your groceries, you have to go to work. I knew when Nora came to our home that I found the right person, because I felt more comfortable going to work knowing that my mother was being well taken care of.
So with this all having been said, you did all the planning. And obviously you changed the house around and did certain things. You had mentioned little things that you would do in order to, I don't want to use the word control, but the way to kind of guide your mother through this illness, because she, well, if you could explain exactly what is Alzheimer's and how does it affect someone on the mental state?
Well, it is a brain disorder. It's not a mental illness. It's basically, to me, it's as if you have a car that's sputtering. It's not connecting properly. So certain cells in the brain are not working properly. Somebody could actually sing a song start to finish, word for word, in tune, but not know what day it is, or how to make their lunch, or how to turn on the television. So it affects the brain in different ways, and people react different ways. I had always expected that if she got Alzheimer's, she wouldn't know who I was. She'd be sitting immobile. She wouldn't communicate. And actually, at the beginning, she was 100% the other way. She was very, very active. She didn't want me to leave the house. She'd get very upset if I left the house. She wanted to keep doing things. She would take all the china from the dining room, bring it upstairs and put it on the bed. And then Nora would take it back down. And you'd think that she would sleep at night because she'd be so active all day. But she'd get up, she'd wake up in the middle of the night, and she'd come looking for me. She'd be at my door. She'd wake me up. We'd try to get her back to bed. It is a fear within the person. They don't know what's going on, and they reach out to the people closest to them.
So there's no physical ailment at all, which is probably the other thing where there's no restriction on their movement. It's just it's the thought process that is the issue.
Yes. I mean, what can happen if the person doesn't have any other illnesses and they do have Alzheimer's, their condition might trigger other symptoms. For instance, weight loss, falls. Falls is a big thing. Picking up something and injuring themselves, those kinds of things. So it just gets to be a situation where you got to be careful and watch them all the time. But at the same time, as Nora did, give the person space, because they still want to be active and they still want to be involved. They don't want to just be taken care of, which we can talk about some of the things that that I feel is important for people caring, both professional people and also family caregivers, about their interaction with their family member, their loved one with Alzheimer's.
Well, my father also, I lost my father to Alzheimer's 3 years ago, and it was, I guess, 2 years from start to finish, from when he ended up in a nursing home and everything. And while he was still at home, he would get up at what they call sunsetting and get up like later in the afternoon. He'd want to go out, he'd want to leave, you know, and this kind of thing. So I can relate to some of the things you're saying, but I'm looking forward to our discussion in the next segment to get more involved in this.
Yeah, we're going to take a break now, and we'll be back, and we'll continue this and try and provide some information to our listening audience that would be helpful in how to handle a situation that they may be experiencing at this point. So we'll be back in a minute.
The Apostle Paul wrote in Ephesians 6:10 to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might so we can stand in the evil day. Let me ask you, are you standing strong in the Lord and in the power of His might? Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and the American Pastors Network, agreeing with the Apostle Paul that when the days are evil, we need God's armor. To modern culture, right is wrong and wrong is right. Good is evil and evil is good. The war against God, the truth, and God's people was started by the devil and is in full swing. The Bible tells us that all who will live godly in Christ Jesus will be targeted and will suffer persecution in the spiritual war. So what must we do? Put on the whole armor of God. Imagine, God designed armor to help us in the spiritual battle and available to us. In the next few weeks, we'll look at this armor of God and what it's for and why we'd better put it on. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you, did you put on God's armor today? Are you even in the battle?
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in 8th grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people, didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Where to be found? Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp, along with my wife Jean from Brandywine Flags in the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton, in studio with Ross Schriftman. We were talking earlier about, Jean, your dad passed away of Alzheimer's, and it's the total opposite, if you will, of Ross's situation, where Ross was able to have his mother live at home, where your dad ultimately ended up in a nursing home. Give us the progression on how all that came about.
Yeah, my story is different, very different than Ross's. My mother and father lived on the Chester River down near Chestertown, Maryland, and my father started doing weird things, and he wasn't eating properly and so forth. And so finally he would do this sunsetting thing where he would want to stand up and go out. So he'd grab some of his clothes and say he was leaving, and, you know, it, like around right after dinner time, so forth. And so they had to call the ambulance, police, whatever, and they took him to the hospital, and they decided that he had Alzheimer's and that he had to go to a nursing home. He couldn't live at home because my mother couldn't take care of him. My brother was living next door, but he couldn't take care of him either. The 24-hour care. So he went into the nursing home, and I live up in Pennsylvania, and my parents were down in Maryland, and my brother was down there. So my brother, my mother's still alive. My brother does the day-to-day, and I was handling the financial things and so forth from Pennsylvania. But I would go down there to visit my father, and in the nursing home, one of the things I saw was they locked them in these chairs, and he kept saying, "I want to get up, I want to get up." I said, "I want him walked at least an hour a day." And they did, because my brother would go every day and visit him, and they did walk him, you know, they have a nurse walk him up and down the halls, and then there was some kind of a thing where he could sit in it and walk, sit in this contraption, for lack of a better term, and he could walk around. Well, then he started trying to climb out of there. But I tried to keep him active as long as possible, and so that was good. But then after a while, they were afraid he'd hurt himself or fall or whatever. Then he started just being in the chair, and then they put him in a wheelchair, and he could wheel around. He was one of the patients that wanted to talk to other people and interact and so forth, and which is was the way he was all his life. He ended up being their favorite patient, and on Valentine's Day, they crowned him king, the favorite patient of all the nurses and so forth, which was great. But it was terrible. Every time I would go down, he would have deteriorated a little bit more. But if you have your parents in, or one of your parents or a relative in a nursing home, it's imperative that you keep an eye, close eye. I think that most of the people that do this care about the patients and so forth. But it's prudent that you keep aware of what kind of care they're getting and what you think their needs are and so forth. So that's basically the experience that I had with Alzheimer's with my father. So,
now, Ross, you had the exact opposite with your mother living at home. You were trying to protect her in certain ways, and you did little things around the house. Share with us some of those things that perhaps someone that's in the same situation right now, that they could take advantage of these ideas that you had.
Sure. One of the things is, it's called wandering, but in my mother's cases, she would point to a neighbor's house and say, "I want to go over there." Or if I was leaving for work, she'd want to go with me, or she was very upset that I was leaving. So what would happen is she'd open the garage door and the dog would bolt out, and then the aide that she had before Nora would be trying to get her back in the house, and I'd see this in the rearview mirror of my car trying to drive to work. Not a very good way to try to start your business day. You have to turn around and try to find the dog and get mom back into the house. So what I did is I had the garage door company, the gentleman, come back, and he changed where the button was, and the button now is above the door. So my mother would come out and punch the old button that wasn't connected to anything, and she'd go back in the house and tell Nora the machine doesn't work. Her favorite word was machine. So anything, she couldn't say garage door, she would say the machine doesn't work. So when I closed that door in the morning, I knew that she wasn't going to be able to get out that way. Then she'd start going out the front door, so we changed the locks on the front door. But Nora would walk with her. If she wanted to go somewhere, they'd try to walk in the backyard, which was fenced in, and do different things, because she wanted to be active. As Jean said, they're still the same person deep inside, and they may be a caring person. They may be involved, have been involved in business, and they want to be treated as an individual, as a person. The worst thing I see is people talking down to the patient. They don't want to be talked about. They want to be talked with, especially from professional doctors, nurses, people like that. They still want to be involved. They may not understand it, but they want that direct conversation. They want the person to look at them and talk to them rather than just talking to the family member that's doing the caregiving.
As a result of all this, you actually wrote a book called My Million Dollar Mom, and it's about your mother and her background and what have you, and it's also about the experience that you had. So how did you come up with the number or the name of the book?
My Million Dollar Mom really has two meanings. The first is that my mother, she was worth $1 million to me. She was a great mom. She raised four boys. She was very involved in her community. She taught us a lot of important lessons, which I can go into. The other reason is when I had her evaluated with the geriatric services, and I asked them, well, after you've done this, somebody in her condition, how long do you think she's going to live with this condition? And they said, I hate to tell you this, but it can be anywhere from 2 years to 20 years. And knowing what I know about long-term care, where home care, if it's round the clock, can cost $100,000 a year. It's a myth that home care costs less than nursing care, because you still have also your living expenses at home. Where in the nursing home, your fee includes room and board. So you've got to basically be running a one-person assisted living facility. So originally I was going to call it my $2 million mom, $100,000 for 20 years plus inflation, and then I changed it to my $1 million mom. So that's how the title became.
So in this book you go to great lengths to explain how you handle different situations and so forth. And as a result, you're now in the product or in the process of producing a movie called My Million Dollar Mom.
Right. Yeah. And that after the when I wrote the book, I started making notes while my mother was in the late stage of her life. She was already bedridden, and in the evening I would sit at her desk in her TV room, and I would just write notes about my experiences with her, who she was, and all of that. And after she died, there's a period of time, and I'm Jewish, there's a period of time called a Shiva, where you sit at home, you don't work, you think about the person that you loved. And at that point, the notes just poured off on the page. So then, actually, Gene had told me about your publisher, and so we published a book with Infinity Publishing, who's local here. And then after the book was published, I started coming up with ideas in my head. Music would play, which would remind me of incidents and stories from my life with my mom. And I started developing the idea of a movie. And that was about 3 years ago. So now we're in what's called a development stage of the movie. We actually have a shoot date for later this summer. And there's a lot involved in making a movie. And I can go into a little bit of that as well.
Very good. So the book itself is almost a how-to book, where it could be kind of a guide for a family that is experiencing an Alzheimer situation with a relative or a friend, that it's almost a walkthrough and a journey that they can kind of follow, if you will.
It tells them what to expect and how to deal with how you dealt with certain situations, and that was great. I loved reading the book.
So
yeah,
so it's you wrote it for several reasons. One is to honor your mother, but then also to provide information to the general public on how do you handle a situation. And as you had mentioned, what, in Philadelphia, how many Alzheimer's patients are there in the immediate area?
Yeah, according to the Alzheimer's Association, which we have a partnership with, which I'll go into, there are 300,000 people in the Philadelphia region, the Philadelphia suburbs, Delaware, and southern New Jersey, that are diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
So this is not some foreign affliction. This affects a lot of people locally that in fact, here we are in studio. Ross lost his mother. My wife Jean lost her dad. And Michael Levin, who's across from us here as the running the board here, lost his grandfather to Alzheimer's. So here we got four people in the room, and three of them have had the same problem. So the book itself is a nice how-to guide. And the movie now will... You had some experiences that you had mentioned with the movie that you can share with us, that the different types of events that occurred. Can you share some of those with us?
Sure. Well, the first thing I did is I decided to write a script. And writing a book is very different than writing a script for a movie. In a book, the book is about 300 pages long, and it took me 3 months to write it. It has a lot of stories and background about who my mother was, my relationship with her, all the different organizations she was involved in, and as you mentioned, the how-to. There's a section on what I went through.
We're going to take a break in a minute. On the other side, Ross will share with you some of these experiences on the how-to, that will allow you, the public listening audience, to relate to this and maybe get some direction on how to work with this this terrible disease. And we'll be back in just a second.
Hi, everybody. Phil Valentine here. It's great to be back on the air in Philly, and especially when my show is being broadcast from the Cradle of Liberty, Valley Forge area, home of freedom-loving patriots both in times past and today, right here on WFYL 1180 AM.
One, two, three.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, inviting you to join me for Backstage Jazz. I'll spend an hour each week taking you behind the music and into the lives of America's top jazz musicians. Experience live jazz music and connect with the artists through backstage interviews. Join us right here for this season of Backstage Jazz. Broadcasting Saturday afternoon at 4 and streaming Sunday night at 6 on WFYL.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
If you like Car Talk, catch Under the Hood, Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 to 7. Exclusively streaming on 1180WFYL.com. Worldwide on your computer or mobile device. Stream Under the Hood this Saturday morning from 6 to 7 at 1180WFYL.com or on your favorite mobile device. Go to our website at 1180WFYL.com to find out more.
Friends, Janet Parshall here, host of In the Market with Janet Parshall. I'm excited about partnering with 1180 AM WFYL to bring you a fast-paced conversation every Sunday. As you listen to In the Market, we'll examine major news stories and issues, equipping you to be bold when voicing truth in a confused and chaotic culture. I look forward to engaging my new friends at 1180 AM WFYL every Sunday at 12:05 p.m. on In the Market.
Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. Thanks for listening to my show and the other great programs carried live on WFYL 1180 AM, broadcasting from the historic Cradle of Liberty area, Valley Forge and Philadelphia.
Welcome back to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp in studio with my wife Jean from Brandywine Flags and the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton, along with Ross Schriftman. Ross, in the last segment, we were talking about the making of the movie My Million Dollar Mom. And tell us a little bit how that all came together. And I know you can't disclose too much about the movie at this point, but the content and why you selected the different things that you did in order to kind of enunciate the issues, a problem and a solution kind of a thing for the Alzheimer's side of it.
Sure. Well, one of the things I wanted to do is raise awareness of what it's like to live and care for somebody with Alzheimer's. Recently, the film Still Alice is out, which has been widely acclaimed. It's a wonderful film if people haven't seen it. But that film is from the perspective of somebody that's fairly young, 49 in the story, who develops Alzheimer's and what she's going through and how she's trying to hold on to her life before things start happening where she can't remember, doesn't know her children, those kinds of things. My Million Dollar Mom will be a movie about, from a son's perspective, of the choices he has to make while his mother is facing Alzheimer's. things that he wanted to do in his lifetime, politics and other things, and how much his mother was supportive of him. And at the same time, he's faced with this crisis that she needs care, and he has promised her that if she ever needed care, she'd remain at home. And it also walks through in the film what it's like to make those decisions and what it's like to care for somebody to the end of their life. We also want to demonstrate that people with Alzheimer's are still valuable and can help other people. In the story in the movie, I took something from real life in that my mother was very perceptive of other people and their concerns and their needs. Throughout her life, she practiced what's called tikkun olam, repairing the world, but doing it one person at a time and not just helping people, but also helping them develop themselves and become independent and be good citizens and do all the other things. So my mother was very perceptive. So in the story, in the movie, she helps a younger character go through a crisis because she perceives what he's going through. So I wanted to demonstrate that people, they still want to do things. They want to be helpful. I used to tell my mother, would you like to come to the office and help me in my office? And that's in the story in the movie as well.
So the value is the key here, that they need to be recognized as being a value and not just someone to be cast off and ignored, where, again, their body is healthy, they can do things, it's just that their mind is not functioning the way it normally would. Is that a fair evaluation?
Yes, absolutely.
Going forward again with the movie on this, what else? Can you share anything else with us on the movie?
Well, recently, we now have a director. Her name is Rose Glaser, Glaeser. She's from New York City. She's also a writer, which helps because she can see things. She likes to tell stories. She did a film called a short film called Terra and the Earth that was nominated for an award about a young girl with a hearing disability. She's very sensitive about her work, and so I'm very happy that she's on board. We have some of our supporting actors. We have Patsy Meck, who was in Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle, had a role in that. She's going to play a friend of my mom's and mine, Gladys. Gladys ended up in a nursing home when her husband died, and that's when in real life my mother made me promise that I'd care for her at home. So Patsy has an important role to play. We have Ernie Phillips from Philadelphia. He's an actor, stage and film, who is going to play my grandfather, who lived with us at the end of his life. And we've got Chris and Sarah Robertson from North Jersey, who are young actors. They're actually brother and sister, and they're going to play the next door neighbor, brother and sister, The brother is the one that my mother actually comforts during the film. So without going into the detail of everybody's got to go see the film, so that I don't want to tell you the whole story yet. Mm-hmm. But it's a very touching story. I've gotten reviews with it. There's organizations that will review your script with experts that review it, and they say it's tragically beautiful. Which is, so bring tissues. You're going to laugh and you're going to cheer, but you're also going to cry a little bit when you go see it. It's very touching. And so we've got a lot to do. We're hoping to shoot this summer. And we have a website as well.
What is your website?
The website is mymilliondollarmom.com. Very simply, mymilliondollarmom.com. We're in the middle of, we're actually at the end of a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo. You can connect right to the page if you want to make a donation, if anybody wants to help us make our film. When you go to mymilliondollarmom.com, you hit the button donate, and then there's a button to take you right to the site. You get all kinds of rewards if you like, People can donate from $5 on up. There's one that you can walk the red carpet. There's one that the night before filming, you have dinner on our set. We're hoping to film at my house and my office and throughout the Philadelphia area, and potentially one day down at the Jersey Shore.
Very good. So this is almost, it's not really a documentary, but it's almost in the lines of that, where it's an educational type film, in addition to being the story of your mother and your family.
Where but it's really a drama, right?
Right. Yeah. What happens is, when I originally wrote the first draft of the script, I basically went through life as it actually was. But in a movie, you really have to be dramatic if you're going to do it as a drama. We've also partnered with the Alzheimer's Association Delaware Valley chapter. They're letting the word out about our film, and 10% of our crowdfunding is going to them. After the film is produced, we plan to do what's called a self-theatrical, which means we're going to be contacting local theaters to have evenings for the Alzheimer's Association where we'll show the film and the audience will make donations to the Alzheimer's Association as part of their fee to see the movie. And then we'll have a discussion afterwards about Alzheimer's and the issues dealing with it. We also plan to show the film throughout the community in assisted living communities, adult daycare centers, organizations, churches, synagogues in the area, and then take it to a wider audience. Distribution of films is a key part of the whole process.
So this is an educational film, if you will, as much as it is an awareness film, where you're bringing this to the community to say, this is real life, this is how it happens, and this is how you can help a loved one get through a situation like this.
Yes, and doing it in an entertaining way as well, because it's not only a profound film with a good, solid message, it also has some really funny parts to it with some surprises, and it's also endearing.
Wonderful. How old was your mom when she passed?
She was 84.
Okay, so you had mentioned the film earlier regarding Alice, who was only 49. So this can afflict someone at an early age, but more often than not, it's in the post-end years, if you will, and the later years of life. So at this point, I'd like to encourage people to read the book, and also consider coming to the movie. Ross, where can we find the book?
The book, also they can go to my website at mymilliondollarmom.com, and there's a link to the book. There's also videos on there. There's a lot of material.
So this is easily accessible to everyone in the community. We encourage you to do that. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back on the other side.
Hello, this is Paul Fisher, headmaster of Coventry Christian School in Pottstown. I am so pleased that WFYL is a growing part of our community, serving as a voice of reason and a defender of and proponent for all that has made and will make America a great nation. There simply are not enough competing voices and ideas in the media, and we are proud to partner with WFYL in working for your liberty and things that truly matter. Advertising on WFYL has served us well and opened doors of opportunity for expanding our mission in classical Christian education, and the good people at the station have been so kind to help us network as well. I hope you will faithfully tune in to WFYL, share this station with others, and consider how a partnership with your organization or business could strengthen our community and build a stronger America.
Stand in the Gap Weekend with Sam Rohr and Gary Dull of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network features a message from one of the nearly 3,000 church leaders that are members of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. The mission is to build a permanent network of pastors across the state that are dedicated to affirming the authority of Scripture and taking seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Every day, we're working to impact the nation's values by encouraging pastors to lead their churches in addressing today's toughest issues, including the deterioration of traditional marriage, pornography, sexual permissiveness, and abortion. You're invited to join us in the battle for truth.
Airing Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. and streaming Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. on our website, 1180wfyl.com.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
My name is Nancy Becker, and I am your Recorder of Deeds here in Montgomery County. It's very important for the veterans to be aware that they should record their DD-214 or military discharge in the Recorder of Deeds office. This is important because when a veteran passes, the funeral director will usually contact their Recorder of Deeds office so that they can arrange for a military funeral. And this relieves the burden of family members of trying to find this very important document. But the most important reason is that we are now issuing a veteran's photo ID card that entitles the veterans to discounts and incentives from nearly 400 businesses here in Montgomery County. All the veteran has to do is come into the Recorder of Deeds office at 1 Montgomery Plaza in Norristown. Parking is always free for our veterans. You just come into the parking garage and tell them you're a veteran and you can park free of charge. Bring along your DD-214 and a photo ID. We'll issue you the veteran's photo ID, give you a list of the businesses that are participating. It takes about 10-15 minutes at the most, and this way you will be receiving these discounts. The incentive for the business to do this is we advertise your business free of charge. My website gets about 1,000 hits a week, so the potential for over 1,000 people of seeing your business is there. Also, every veteran gets a list of all the businesses participating. They get it when they come into the office, and we email them to them every 3 to 4 weeks so that the veteran is aware of the new businesses we have. Veterans of Montgomery County, please come into our office. It would be my honor to shake your hand and thank you for your service to our country.
Welcome back to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp, along with my wife Jean from Brandywine Flags in the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton, in studio with Ross Schriftman. And Ross, early in the program you had mentioned that one of the key things in this whole process is to plan ahead and to plan for insurance, long-term care insurance, and what have you. Obviously, we all don't plan ahead, and I'm sure that there are people now that are listening to us that have not done that, and they're stuck in this situation of what to do. How can we reach out, and what is the solution, if you will, or what are the directions that they can take to help themselves if they haven't planned and they've come into this in contact with this disease?
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, there's the Alzheimer's Association. There is a helpline, so if somebody perceives that a family member is developing or has Alzheimer's and they don't know what services or how to organize it, and they're already there in that situation, they can call 1-800-272-3900. And that's the helpline for the Alzheimer's Association. And they can explain their situation, and they can find out about the care in the community, what services the person might be eligible for, and as well as support groups. There are 200 support groups in the Philadelphia region where people that are going through it with their family members can meet other people going through the same thing. The important thing is that they're not alone because there's so many people that have it. That's one thing. Every county also has a Office of Adult Aging Services, and they can contact them as well. That's for people that have not planned ahead. The difficulty, Michael, is that when you're in that situation, you haven't planned ahead, you also haven't decided, well, who's going to take care of mom or dad? Who's going to be in charge of that? Many times people haven't done their legal documents, power of attorney. Who's going to make financial decisions for the person? Who's going to make care decisions? So planning is very important. And if you're in that situation, many times I find clients that are dealing with their parents now, and all of a sudden they're calling me saying, you know, we better take care of it for ourselves because we don't want to leave this problem to our children when it does happen.
So with that, these support groups and the agencies and whatever can help walk them through the process of writing up the documents and changing over power of attorney, things like that, so that the helpline, that's a real live person that will step in and partner with you on that?
Well, the helpline is for the Alzheimer's is, mom or dad has Alzheimer's, where can I get services? It's not the legal documents, but they may give you information about what you need to do. An attorney that specializes in working with people who have illnesses, that's very, very important. Every bar association has a list of attorneys that specialize in that area.
I think that is very important because you can't just go to any old lawyer because this is a whole separate specialization field for elder care and so forth. So make sure that you find an attorney that specializes in this type of situation.
Is there any kind of written documentation that's a guide on a how-to list of things that you can do and have to do and who do you contact?
I'm not aware of it, although the Aging and Adult Services do have booklets and materials about services in the community that you should look at. One of the things to keep in mind also is that there is a government program called Medicaid. Now, Medicaid was originally for the poor. What you have to do is you have to have only a certain amount of assets in order to qualify. Well, many times people that are not poor will qualify for Medicaid by divesting assets and doing certain planning. But you got to realize something. First of all, that's taxpayer paid. And secondly, the decisions that are made about your care and what goes on and whether you have a problem with a vendor that put in a wheelchair, let's say, and I know this is an actual case in Delaware County, Pennsylvania. The decisions aren't made by you and your family. The decisions are made and the contracts are between the government and the companies providing that. So you lose some of your rights when you actually go into a program like that. So it's very, very important that people plan for themselves beforehand so that they can make the decisions of where they're going to be cared for, who's going to care for them. And if they have a problem with a home health agency or a vendor that put in a wheelchair or a ramp that isn't properly designed or installed, then they have the ability to get that taken care of. So it's very important, as Gene mentioned, you should also be checking. If you have family members in facilities, you want to make sure that you're checking and seeing what's going on. If the facility is a nice facility, that doesn't necessarily mean that the care is good. It may be a beautiful place, but if the staff isn't interacting properly with the people or there's not good management, you have to watch those kinds of things.
Where do you go when you have a problem like that? Is there an agency that you would go to, or is there someone, again, that would be an assistant to you that would work with you to help walk you through these different problems? Is it the aging department?
Right. Well, that would be one of them. Most services in long-term care have to be licensed, and there's quality checks that are supposed to be done, usually on the state level, Department of Health. If it's an insurance product, it's the Department of Insurance. If it's health, it's the department. If it's a long-term care facilities, it's the Department of Health.
So the good news is that help is available. It's as close as your telephone. It's as close as your computer. So let's look back a little bit on your mother's life. And I know that you were influenced greatly, obviously, by her and led to be very close with her. Tell us a little bit more about her and her background and kind of how her life unfolded prior to the Alzheimer's.
Sure. I'll go kind of very quickly back to the beginning. She was born in Springfield, Massachusetts, grew up in Brookline, Massachusetts. In World War II, she lived in Washington, D.C., and she worked for the State Department as a Spanish language translator. She worked directly under Nelson Rockefeller, who was head of the Inter-American Affairs during World War II. And after the war, she met my dad. They got married. They raised four children. She was very active politically in her community, in her synagogue. My parents divorced. She got very active in Parents Without Partners. She started the Buxmon chapter. She helped people. She had friends that had bad situations with their marriages. One in particular, she helped the person get to the point that she eventually got her master's degree in nursing and ended up helping a whole bunch of other people. And that's kind of passing it along. I forget the wording. There was actually a movie with that title. But paying it forward, that's what I was trying to get at. She helped Soviet Jews who were trying to get out of the Soviet Union. She wrote letters. She wrote so many letters that one of the people came here and said that the KGB called him in one day and said, "Who's this Shirley Schriftman? She's writing these long letters. We don't have time to read them." And that's why they think they were let go. It's because of my mother's long letters. So she helped them settle. And, of course, I was helping her do that. I ran for state representative in 1974 out of college. She helped me with that. She ran for district justice in Montgomery County in 1975, probably the first woman to run for a judicial post. She did a lot of things during her life. She helped the homeless. And the interesting thing about that is she used to go with me to feed them. And she would still go with Alzheimer's, and they would actually help feed her. And that's how things, giving and receiving is a chapter I have in my book. So she was a big influence on my life. And this is a way for me to, as you say, honor her memory by showing how people on a one-on-one basis can be friends with everybody and be helpful as much as possible. My brother once said, we were in Atlantic City, and he turned to me at one point and said, "There's only seven people left in Atlantic City Mom hasn't talked to." and she talked to them in Spanish and English, and it was that kind of a person, and she was even that way with the Alzheimer's.
That's a fabulous story, if you will. The fact that I can totally understand now why she wanted to be of a value. She was value to so many people for her whole life. And even though she was afflicted with Alzheimer's, she did not want to just walk away from that and say, "Hey, I'm finished with my life, so I don't care about other people." She deeply cared about others all the way through her entire life. And I thank you so much, Ross, for coming in and sharing that. Again, we'd like to have the audience, if you could recap the support, if you could, that's available.
Sure. Okay, the support for Alzheimer's is 1-800-272-3900, and my website is mymilliondollarmom.com.
So the information's available. Listening audience, we encourage you to act on this and plan if you can in advance. If you can't, at least now we have the opportunity for you to reach out and get the support that is needed to help everyone that is afflicted with this terrible disease. Thank you again, Ross, for being here, and we hope you folks have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week on Raise the Standard.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But This was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm taking in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.